Into a new series, if you can read lips, I suppose you could go into what Craig and I were able to record the other day, and for some strange reason it just didn't. Craig, it was really censorship, I think, wasn't it? You were just refusing to let me speak. Yeah, speaking of political agendas. But I'm doing a mini series between now and the end of December, Lord willing. I'm just calling it linkages. Every message is going to have something from the Old Testament, whether it's a direct prophecy or more of a kind of a concept piece that links Old and New Testament. I'd like to do that. It'll set us up very nicely, I think, for a couple of these. It'll pay attention to the circumstances of the birth of Jesus, which the Western Church has conveniently remembered as late in December every year. The Eastern Church does it in January. The fact is, none of us knows when it was exactly, but it's a time when a lot of people are aware of the birth of Jesus, even in very secular settings, and so at least be aware of that. I thought a good thing. But the bigger picture is just linkages, old and new, and we'll look to that to the end of December, and then I'll start an exegetical series in January. Haven't decided which one yet, so if you want to weigh in on that, you're welcome to say your piece. I'd like to talk about the Abraham linkage, or the Abraham connection, reading first from just one piece out of an involved covenant God makes with Abraham. Genesis 12, opening 8 verses. The Lord said to Abram, he's not yet been renamed, has he? The Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and here's just the way God grants it all, and I will make you a great nation, I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I'll bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you or opposes you, I will curse. And in you, this is to Abraham, and to you, and you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Wow. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot, nephew, went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. So he's over in Mesopotamia, and he's going to move westward into the Middle East. And Abram took Sarai, later Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions, which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan, and Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. So Abram built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. And then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel, pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east, and there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the Lord's name. So there's God's covenant, one of the iterations of God's covenant with Abram. Now, keep an eye out for the linkage. Acts chapter 3, a situation that seems to have no connection, at least at first. What happens in Acts 3? Well, Peter and John were going up to the temple around the ninth hour. This is mid-afternoon. It was the hour of prayer. And a certain man who had been lame from his mother's womb was being carried along, whom they used to set down every day at one of the inner gates of the temple called the Beautiful Gate in order to beg alms of those who were entering the temple. When he saw Peter and John about to go into the temple, he began asking to receive alms. And Peter, along with John, fixed his gaze upon him and said, look at us. And he began to give them his attention, expecting to receive something from them. But Peter said, I do not possess silver and gold, but what I do have, I give to you in the name of Jesus Christ the Nazarene. Walk. And seizing him by the right hand, he raised him up, and immediately his feet and ankles were strengthened. And with a leap, he stood upright, began to walk, and he entered the temple with them, walking and leaping and praising God. And all the people saw him walking and praising God, and they were taking note of him as being the one who used to sit at the beautiful gate of the temple to beg alms. And they were filled with wonder and amazement at what had happened to him. And so while he was clinging to Peter and John, all the people ran together to them at the so-called portico. This is a porched area around the temple area, the portico of Solomon, full of amazement. And when Peter saw this, he spoke to the people. And here's his message. We're going to read part of it. Men of Israel, why do you marvel at this? Why do you gaze at us as if by our power or piety we made him walk? The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of our fathers, has glorified his servant Jesus, the one whom you delivered up and disowned in the presence of Pilate, when even Pilate had decided to release him. You disowned the holy and the righteous one and asked for a murderer to be granted to you, but you put to death the Prince of Life, the one whom God raised from the dead, a fact to which we are all witnesses. Now, I'd like to come down to the latter part of the talk, verse 24. So as he spoke about all the things in the way the Old Testament anticipates Jesus, he says, and likewise, all the prophets who have spoken from Samuel onward and his successors also announced these days. It's you who are the sons of the prophets and of the covenant which God made with your fathers, saying to Abraham, in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Now he's going to identify that seed, that offspring. For you first, God raised up his servant and sent him to bless you by turning every one of you from your wicked ways. And there's a linkage with Abraham. You know, God has one absolutely infamous sense of time. Once in a while, we get criticized or appreciated for our creative sense of time, you know, packing one more thing into something and being a little bit late, or not managing our time well and not doing what we were supposed to do. A lot of us have senses of time. I often use expressions like mid-afternoon or early evening or late evening, which are very clear to me what kind of sense of time. Late evening is any time between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. That's late evening, isn't it? You know, some agree and some disagree, yeah. I have an infamous sense of time, but nothing even remotely like God's sense of time. This is the time concept to take all. It says in 2 Peter 3:8, with the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years. And 1,000 years is one day. You know the quotation very well. Now that is one crazy sense of time. And it's absolutely serious. It's absolutely serious when it says it. We might just say God doesn't seem to be in a hurry to do anything, does he? It's amazing sense of time. There's an implication, a couple implications of this, you know. When God plans and intends things, according to Ephesians 1, some of these things are done, well, all these things are done, at the foundation of the world. In other words, really before time emerges as we have a sense of time. But before any of that stuff is done, before anybody exists, before anything is fully formed, God has already been planning stuff and will take, well, I don't know, let me just say countless millennia. I don't know how to count them. Countless millennia to actually make real what he is saying and thinking back then as to what he's going to do. It's phenomenal. It really is. And it far exceeds not only our own lifetime, our own era, but even just everything that marks time in our world. And there's an extra piece coming back to 2 Peter just briefly that makes this comment, the Lord is not slow about his promise or promises, as some count slowness, but he's patient. So there's something tied in with the timing of God that has to do with allowing a lot of opportunities, allowing many, many inroads in for people to come back to their Creator. He's not slow, but he's patient. And we get just a little bit of a sense of this. One of my favorite things to do in visiting Israel is to go up north to the town of Dan. Neat site. I could talk for hours about Dan, but I want to mention just one site in that place. And there is standing at this location of Dan a mud brick gateway that is estimated to be more than 4,000 years old. It is believed to be the oldest standing mud brick gateway anywhere in the world. And the only reason it's preserved at all and not crumbled is it got filled in and eventually protected, partly accidentally, partly intentionally. But we can say, as Abraham makes this journey and he comes from the north and he comes southward, assuming he visited Dan, Abraham himself walked through that gateway. Amazing, amazing. And I stand in front of that gateway because I can see it, I can touch it. I always poke for a few archaeological pieces at the bottom. I've got a nice little spindle whorl from that, that I don't know if it's as old as Abraham or not, but I stand in front of that and I think God was planning things when this gateway was being built, and he's still in the process of making those come real today. That blows my mind. I know it does yours. So to see the biblical story, it's like taking everything with a fisheye lens, you know, those lenses that take in all that's around and bend the image so that you get all of this kind of put together like this, but it really expresses a large picture. And that's the nature of linkages, and that's why I wanted to do this little series, is linkages are things that God sets up and gets going and then may take a very long time to make them complete, all right? Here's one of the early linkages, by the way, that's right within the Old Testament, although it continues today. It has to do with Adam and Eve. You know, in the day you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you surely die. And they eat of the tree, and they don't die, at least that's what it looks like. But you realize things are changing. And things made good are no longer good. And you get to the fifth chapter, and it gives you this genealogy, and it goes, and he died, and so-and-so was born, he died. And you see God carrying through what he said he would do, in this case in a negative way. There's many positive ones as well. Very specific predictions that God makes in that time, right? That the offspring of Eve will do battle with the offspring of the snake. We know who's going to win that one, right? Moses' bronze serpent, holding up a replica of a snake so people won't die. And then you get to the Gospel of John, and here's Jesus being lifted up. Jesus says, like Moses' serpent, so that people can live. That's thousands of years, millennium and a half roughly apart. You have Bethlehem, according to Micah, tiny little obscure town, but it will be famous, little among the towns, and yet something great. Promise in Isaiah of a virgin's child, and we have that fulfilled seven centuries later in Jesus. These are just a taste of the many of these long-term linkages where God sets something in motion, designed at the beginning of time, established and conveyed at some point in time, and then sometimes in a hugely late distant time, much, much afterwards, making real on it. This is the way it works with covenant promises, that sometimes they're put in place, but we have to keep looking for a very, very long period for God to make it real. And by the way, a little piece here, it works with promises. Someone makes you a promise and you sometimes say, I trust that person. I know it'll become reality. And sometimes you say, I'm not sure I trust that person. We'll wait and see if it's going to become reality. We have God, it says in Hebrews, makes a promise and swears that it's true by himself, because he can't swear by anyone greater than himself. What a great way to see that. So the Abraham linkage, let's look at a couple pieces here. Covenant with Abraham. What is a covenant? Well, you know, it's a formalizing of a relationship, right, between two persons or two parties. Covenants contain intentions. You know, we've got this plan, and we're entering into this, and we're going to carry this through together. And each party has a certain set of connections that go with meeting that covenant expectation. It's fascinating, I think. Of all the covenants we have one with Adam, we have one with Noah, we have one with Abraham, we have one with Moses and David, and there's more like that. There's only one of them that has three iterations, Genesis 12, 15, 17. Three different times God steps into Abram's life specifically to work out the covenant that he's doing with him. And I don't know exactly why that is. I love it, but I just can't explain why. But here's the sum total of it all, according to God, starting with Genesis 12, adding a few pieces. God grants Abram a great name, right? Just gives it to him. Now, what does that look like? Well, you can go far ahead, and if you ask any committed Jew, who's the father of the Jewish faith? The good Abraham. The indicate. Where do we start counting the story of the Israelites and the development into Judaism? It's with Abraham. It's always with Abraham. He is the absolute ancestor of the line, not only the biological, but the line of the faithful. It's the father. He's got a great name today. He makes a great nation, which he can't imagine at this point is going to be. He's 75. Come on. No kids. How do you get a great nation out of that? Well, we know the story after the fact, but we're not telling. He has to wait, right? Be a great blessing to others. Now, that's intriguing, but what does it look like? Doesn't know yet. It's just beginning to play out according to Acts, at least in his time. He'll get special protection, especially as he enters a land in the Middle East. It's not his homeland, and you know how it goes with people who travel, visit, and are visible minorities. They're at risk. You know that, and I know that. It's the way the world works, unfortunately. God will protect him, especially at his most vulnerable times. And yes, absolutely, this is the chapter 17 affirmation, you will have offspring. I've got to say, if I had to wait to 75 and had to wait another 24 years, I think I would just opt for adoption, frankly. It's much easier, you know. But we know the story. We know it's true. Here's God swearing by himself, impossible as it seems, this is true, and it will be made real. And so these provisions, which take decades in some cases, millennia in others. What a wonderful story, transcending an amazing amount of time. It really is. Some of my own biggest amazements have been to meet up, usually with the internet, the connections that are made possible through, for example, Facebook, all right, to have met up with people that I knew a half century earlier and haven't seen for the last 50 to 55 years. That amazes me. That's impressive. That's nothing compared to this. This is just stunning. And here is God with all these promises lined up. And indeed, according to Acts 3, this is what's going to happen. So that's God setting a linkage into play. And then, as my mother would say, just taking his jolly good time to do these things when he's ready to do so. Patient, much more patient than I am, I have to admit. So, specifically, let's get this personally for us today. First piece, what did Abraham learn in his life? He did lots of things. He learned lots of things. But fundamentally, what is it that revolutionized Abraham's life? Well, according to Romans chapter 4, what Abraham learned is that he could not prove himself to God as being good enough. But he did learn this, that if he threw himself and trusted God, admitted what his limits were, acknowledged that he just couldn't pull it off by himself, right? What does he learn? Well, he learns life by faith, and God counts it towards him as righteousness, right? Notice, not he made it, not that he earned it. But God says, given. given. Catch this. A man like you and like myself, who is far from the ideal God wants us to be, and God says, righteous you are. Not you will be or you'll become, but you are righteous by faith alone. And that's what Abram gets. He gets learning to love God after faith first, right? He doesn't prove his love for God and then gets faithfulness out of it. But God blesses him, and then he learns more to love God and walk with God as time goes on. What else did he learn? What's the nature of the message? Well, according to Galatians chapter 3, what Abraham's getting is a taste of the idea that though God is working with Abram's people, God is going to go well beyond that and speak to all the people who aren't Jewish, who aren't Israelite, right? So the coming into this massive influx of non-Jewish people in the first century as the church is expanding, according to the Bible, according to Paul the ex-Pharisee, Abraham had a glimpse of that. That he was looking something big, his own people, but something even bigger coming about with those who were beyond his own people. The gospel, good news to the Gentiles. To the Gentiles. Do you catch this? This is what Paul says Abram learned. Neat. What did Abraham anticipate? Well, according to Jesus in John 8, Abraham rejoiced at the prospect of seeing my day, says Jesus. Quite a statement. Abraham, says Jesus, paraphrasing, 2,000 years ago, this father of the Jews was looking forward to Jesus' day, says Jesus. An amazing view, really is. And it comes together well. I'm going to close with this. Galatians 3:29. What a perfect place to say this, because we're all good Gentiles here. If you belong to Christ, you are Abram's offspring. You're the ones. We're the ones receiving the wonderful things that God has intended since that ancient linkage in time before time, planning to extend the grace and the mercy and the peace to us. Friends, it's why you can say when you come to worship, grace, mercy, and peace to you. Why I can bless you at the end, grace, mercy, and peace. Because if you belong to Christ, you're Abram's offspring. What a great place to be. Can't imagine a better one. Lord, for this linkage that is, frankly, mind-blowing, this linkage that is bigger than our lives, bigger than our time period, bigger than our country and its politics, bigger than our imagination, bigger than the collective imaginations of human beings everywhere. What a wonderful fish-eye glimpse you have given us of the things that you are planning, intending, have laid down the foundation for, and are carrying through even as we speak this morning. What a great view of a magnificent God. And you have called us by your name. And we thank you.